If you are a teacher, parent, administrator, student, and/or anyone who loves reconnecting children with nature, and you want to figure out how to cultivate learning gardens and nature-based curriculum, then this is the podcast, the Outdoor Classrooms Podcast. My name is Victoria Hackett. I am the founder of OutdoorClassrooms.com and the Secret Gardens Nature Classes. I love witnessing the magic that happens when children are playfully learning outdoors. Observing the return of wonder and curiosity when children are interacting with nature is pure magic. This is the podcast that is going to help you capture children's interest and give you not only inspiration, but some real life strategies that are going to help you figure out how to use the outdoor space, your outdoor space, as a teaching tool, so you can enlighten the playful learning experience for young children. Welcome to our Outdoor Classrooms community. Mel Marchand is the director of OMFS and a certified forest school practitioner. She holds both a bachelor and master of political science and found her way into education through a deep passion for children, nature, and alternative approaches to learning. While pursuing her Bachelor of Education, Mel discovered OMFS and immediately felt drawn to its philosophy. What she loves most about forest school is the deep respect educators have for children and the relationship-based approach to learning. She believes children thrive when they are trusted, supported, and free to explore the world around them. Mel is passionate about creating welcoming spaces where children and families feel connected, valued, and free to be themselves. She is continually inspired by the curiosity, resilience, and joy that emerge when children are given the time and the space in nature. Without further ado, Mel. Hello, everybody. We have a very, very special episode. We have Mel here from Aurora Madante Forest School, and she's going to help answer the question, what happens when we trust children, trust nature, and trust ourselves enough to do education a little bit differently? So thank you for coming, Mel, and I can't wait to talk to you more about your forest school and looking at education a little bit differently.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Great. So forest schools are really becoming more and more common now, but I feel like yours sort of has a very distinct feel to it. Can you share a little bit about the philosophy that guides the decisions that you make in your program?
Yeah. So we see children as being smart, capable, and responsible for directing their own learning. So children come to us with ideas and questions, and we help them to explore all of their interests in the forest. Why we love what we do is we love to help children develop a strong connection with nature so that we can help to create the next generation of adults who love and care about the earth.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful. So when people visit I want to make sure I say this right, Aurora Madante Forest School, for the first time, what do they often misunderstand something about what they're seeing? Because it might be something that they don't recognize or they're kind of expecting something.
Yeah, I think, well, a lot of people in town, they follow us online, so they kind of see what we're up to. And I think they have like a general idea of what happens at forest school, but I have heard some, you know, surprise when people come for the first time. Some people seem to have researched forest school very well and kind of understand what will be happening. But I'd say two common surprising factors for parents, one of which would be they're surprised that we don't have more stuff planned and we don't have more toys. So they might show up and be like, okay, what are you guys going to do all day? Like, what's the plan? Where are all the toys? Like, you know, just like give me an idea and I'll usually we have two or three ideas of what we'll do in a day. So maybe we're going to go on a scavenger hunt in the woods that the teachers have planned. Maybe we will do a flower craft and maybe we will cook some food on the pizza. So three ideas that we'll do in the day. we don't always end up doing the ideas that we come with because, you know, sometimes we introduce an idea to the kids and they're like, no, we have this way better idea. Let's do it. And our teachers are so good at following their lead. For example, last week, a squirrel got into one of the kids' lunches. So although I had this really neat bubble craft set up, I was going to like have the kids go in this tub of bubbles and like do a hula hoop over them and they were going to love it. But instead, we ended up making squirrel traps for the whole day. And yeah, and it was, and this is what I always love to say to parents is like, maybe it looks like they're just playing, but they're learning so much from it. They're working as a team, they're collaborating, they're communicating with one another, they're problem solving, they're using their imagination, they're building things, they're using, you know, math, measurement, lots of STEM, and it looks different. And it's just always so exciting to see the ideas that kids come up with. So it can be hard to explain this to parents that like, yeah, we have a few things planned, but we're going to see where the day takes us. Because I think sometimes it can feel maybe like we're not doing enough, but I assure you, we are doing so much and more, and our teachers are absolutely incredible, and they'll always take things a step further for the kids. So they'll say, you know, how many squirrels do you plan to trap in there? How can we make sure that your squirrel trap will not harm the squirrels? And just to be clear, no squirrels were actually trapped. It was more of just like a bear hunt kind of mentality, like we're going on a squirrel hunt.
Right.
And then, yeah, the teachers are then great at pulling out literature that matches with that. And they'll find some squirrel books. And obviously, it seemed like the day was feeling kind of silly. So we ran with that too. And we read some silly squirrel books. Maybe we'll sing a squirrel song. So although we have plans, it doesn't always go the way we want it to. And forest school teachers are just so great at adapting and pivoting once they see that kids are really engaged in something. So that's one thing, is the parents are often surprised that there's not more structure to the day. And I think it takes some kids a while to be okay with that. Like sometimes kids get there and they feel uncomfortable when there's no like structured activity for them to do right away. And we just help them to maybe engage with other kids and introduce them to other friends who are playing something. But yeah, some kids struggle a bit more because it's not something that they're used to from maybe daycare or preschool or public school. Everything is usually planned and set up for them. So it kind of takes them a while to figure out how to just play in the forest. And then the other surprise for a lot of parents is that we run through the winter. So we're in Ontario. Winters can get cold, but I explain to people it's okay to be cold. And we always make sure we're safe. And if kids do feel, you know, uncomfortably cold, we'll go inside, we'll warm up. We'll have, you know, hopefully they have a warm lunch and then we'll head back out. But we do run through the winter, and kids actually love being outside in the winter. And it ends up being a lot of people's favorite season to be at forest school.
Yeah. I found the same thing in my nature classes. It's incredible. We're not as far north as you, but same. It's incredible. So thank you for that. That's an incredible, it's truly, I almost see it as that trust fall. It seems like your teachers and your community have really embraced that trust, trusting the children, trusting nature, and trusting to do education differently. And that's what I really want to dig in today. So can you walk me through a typical morning before children arrive? So what are you looking for in the forest before anybody else gets there?
Yeah, great question. So every morning, the teachers get there about 45 minutes before the students. One teacher will start to set things up. So they'll, you know, bring the wagon over, get all the gear ready. And then the other teacher, usually we have three or four teachers working each day. But one teacher will go do a site assessment. So there's just a link that they go to on their phone. And each day, one teacher is responsible for checking to make sure that everything is safe. So they'll go check the bathroom, make sure, you know, everything's feeling safe and okay there. But the biggest risk is, of course, in the forest. So the teacher goes down and they assess the trees mainly. So they'll look up and down and all around, noticing if things feel windy or just unpredictable. That teacher will check the radar, they'll check wind conditions and any weather that's anticipated for the day. And there have been a few times when a teacher has gone in and been like, you know what, we're not going to go in the forest today because I noticed that there's a few hanging branches from last night's windstorm and I don't think the kids should be in there. And we always, the rule we follow is we follow the lead of the most conservative educators. So if one teacher is feeling even a little bit unsafe or just uneasy about something, then all of us just immediately go, okay, I hear you. Like, let's move on and figure out how to fix it. So, you know, on a day where there maybe are some hanging branches and if I'm not there, then they would call me in, I would come take a look. And I would either try to resolve the situation on my own or call in an arborist to come help us out.
Brilliant.
One time I went in to do, so there was a day we had like, it was crazy weather, lots of trees down and whatnot. So I went in with a teacher and we were like, yeah, this is not a good forest day. And as we were doing the site assessment, a lynx walked by us.
Wow.
Yeah. So we're also looking for, you know, maybe animals that might be in our play zones that so we saw the lynx and we were like, you know what, we're going to give the lynx lots of space today. We're going to play somewhere else. Or maybe there is, you know, like a raccoon has gotten into something and it needs to be cleaned up. So yeah, we're looking for all sorts of safety. Yeah. Any sort of safety issues that might come up in the forest. We're doing a really good check each morning. Yeah. And then kids get there and then we get to start our day.
Amazing. Amazing. So are these are all public. Are they public, private spaces? Are they?
Yeah, great question also. So previously, we have always rented spaces. So right now we have two locations. One is at, it's like a community farm. And there's been some challenges being at a community farm because there's other people there. And, you know, when we're doing our site assessments, there might be something left in the bathroom, like, you know, maybe someone left a hot pot of coffee or something like that. So There's some challenges with sharing spaces. And then our other location, it's a private landowner and he operates his own business there. So, you know, more space sharing things to be aware of. But we actually recently purchased property. So we own our own land now and we're going to be moving some of our programs in September.
Wow. Mm-hmm. A lot under the sun. My goodness.
Yeah.
So one moment that has made you completely change how you teach. Is there one moment or two moments or something that might have changed the way you teach or your philosophy of education?
Yeah. I mean, I would say it was very early on before I even knew I wanted to be a forest school teacher. I was going through teachers college and I was doing my placements at some local schools and it wasn't feeling entirely right. Like I never felt like I had enough time for all the kids. And there was one particular day where a student had an accident and I didn't feel like I could handle it, you know, the way I would want to with like all the empathy, care and love that I wish that I had because there was 23 other kids who also needed my help. Anyways, and then the next day I was supply teaching at Oromodonte Forest School. So this was before I became director. I was just teaching, but I went and I was supply teaching and a child had an accident and I got to handle it, you know, exactly the way I wanted to, where I like, you know, pulled them aside and the situation was just handled like very respectfully and delicately. And that's where I was like, oh, I think I just need, like, I like small group learning and I like being able to, you know, when things do come up for students, whether it's an accident or whether they have a particular question, like I just do not like to rush through them. And I like to actually like get into the nitty gritty of like whatever's going on in their life, whether it's like a challenge with a peer or just like a really big learning moment for them. It's so great in these small groups to actually be able to like really dive into things with them. It feels really special. And I'd say that's been a huge part of my teaching journey.
Yeah, it's beautiful. So building this forest school isn't necessarily all about the children. It's also about creating a culture. How intentional are you about building that culture among your staff? And you spoke beautifully. You said they're the best in the world. How do you create that as an owner and a director?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really hard. And I think I've learned that not everyone gets it. And I think some people want to work in outdoor ed, which is great, but not everyone is a fit for our culture. Our culture is very, it's very gentle, but firm and, we have boundaries, but also we let the children lead. And a lot of teachers have a hard time with that, especially if they come, you know, from other places where there's more of that hierarchy. So I think a lot of teachers have a hard time with just accepting that, you know, kids are going to be kind of leading the day and seeing us as co-learners rather than, you know, I'm teaching you. So I think I've learned that it's like hard to teach that mentality. And sometimes either you have it or you don't. So I think it just really begins with the hiring process. And I try really hard with hiring to make sure that people that I hire fit our culture. I do like I'd start with a Zoom interview and then a working interview where they come in for a few hours as like a supply teacher. And I just observe and see, mainly it's just like how they interact with kids. And it, like I said, it's so hard to teach our approach. You know, there are a lot of people out there who have a similar mentality. So it can be hard to find the right people. But once we do, I feel like there's honestly not a whole lot that I have to do to teach culture wise, because they just, you know, they're coming into it for the right reasons. And
yeah.
They have that deep, deep respect for children and their learning. But I do things to help create community. Like I take all the teachers in the winter on like a nice outing during the day. I take them on a spa day.
Really?
Yeah, I do. It feels like they're you know, struggling through the winter. It can be hard. Yeah. Like it's grueling work. You're tired. The days are so short. There's like no sunlight. And then to just like give them a day where I'm like, I see how hard you're working and I value you so much. So like, we're going to take the day off. Usually it's kind of planned last minute to like, once we feel like we need it.
Yeah.
And, you know, other group outings where the teachers sense that they're appreciated and where they have a chance to kind of like talk with one another. Because I find in the day when you get there, set up, site assessment, working with kids all day, clean up, go home, there's not actually like much of a chance to talk beyond that.
Yeah.
I think the relationships that all the teachers have become really strong and they all really love each other. And I think that helps to create our company culture. And also, I think it helps them in the day. Like they just really get each other. And sometimes they can just give each other a look and the other person knows like, oh, I need to jump in right now because you need a break from this and you go have a lunch and all, you know. So I think
That's so great.
So much that goes on once they get to know each other really well. And once it's like a really cohesive teaching group, they don't even have to say things sometimes.
Do you feel like there is a pool of educators coming out of school that have the nature-based that background? Or do you feel like you have to train them when they get to you?
I mean, a bit of both. Like, I feel like I've had a lot of applicants who are really strong teachers, but don't necessarily have the outdoor ed background, or I have really strong outdoor, you know, like wilderness first aid trainers or backcountry camping guides, but don't necessarily have that much experience with like certain children or age groups, personalities.
Yeah.
But then I do find that there are some people who have both. I'd say it's probably more rare to have someone who's like really well experienced with education and also outdoor ed. But I try to like build the team so that if someone's a really strong educator, I'll put them with someone who has really strong outdoor skills. And then hopefully together they can help to teach one another the skills that the other might be interested in learning.
Yeah. That's amazing. Yeah, it's so interesting to me because we're, you know, hoping to get that population of folks coming out of schools having this skill set. So it's interesting to hear from your perspective. What would be the hardest season that you've ever had since opening your school or taken over your school?
Yeah, what a good question. I'd say it was definitely September of last year. So we went from one location to two.
Oh, yeah.
And we opened the location in September. And on the first day of school, I had three or four teachers quit for different reasons. Like it wasn't, you know, no hard feelings or anything. But so opening new location, I lost three or four teachers and then was like, oh, my gosh, I have this new location. Basically opening a second school is what it felt like because it's all new kids, all new families, all new teachers, new location. Entirely new program too. So everything was new. And then I just lost all the staff that I had trained over the summer to different you know, life circumstances. And I, you know, I went through a lot of like anxiety and stress, got some gray hairs and made it out the other side stronger.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's those moments of discomfort, I feel like, where you grow as a leader and, you know, you make mistakes along the way and you learn from them. And yeah, it was just a really hard time. And it just felt like everything was going wrong. And I was like, should this program even be happening? Like, why is this all happening? Are these signs? But I persevered and we found, you know, different teachers who were able to join us in the fall and everything worked out. But September, October, November was like so, so tough.
Very tough. So interesting. Yeah. So with that, just even thinking about that challenge, have you ever sort of maybe during that time you were thinking, is this even this dream sustainable? What gets you? Do you think about thoughts like that or you just keep persevering?
Yeah, I definitely had thoughts of that. But, you know, everyone had signed up and all the parents were so excited. There was no way there was no way aside from like our, you know, something happening with our location that I would ever shut that down because,
yeah,
you know, all these parents were committed to outdoor ed for their kids. So I felt like it was impossible to not follow through with it, even through all of those challenges. We had to make it work. And it honestly did work out for the best. Like I said, I learned so much from that really challenging period of growth and then found, you know, staff shifted around a bit. Some people were able to come back later on. And the team that we ended the year with was like absolutely amazing. And I'm so happy that it was them. So it all worked out, but I definitely did have doubts. And I thought about, you know, I was like, why would I have done this? Things were so easy before. Things were so routine and smooth with all the other location and all the other programs. Why would I rock the boat like this?
Yeah. But I think you're right. I think it's when we kind of push the limit and put ourselves into uncomfortable situations, that's when we learn the most. And that's when, you know, and then it's sort of, then it's those crazy, crazy things that happen is then you're on the cusp of something that's even greater. So it's kind of reminding our listeners that, you know, if you're in that sea of craziness to keep going,
mm-hmm.
because you, look what happened to you. So in terms of just other folks that don't necessarily maybe not know that much about forest schools, do you feel like they may romanticize about forest schools that they don't see behind the scenes? Like there's a lot that goes on behind the scenes. You're doing the assessments and all of that. Do you feel like there's kind of is do you feel like forest schools is romanticized?
I think by some, like to a certain degree, I think some people know exactly what they're getting into. Do you mean more so like by families who are registering or teachers?
I think maybe family, you know, people that aren't in the world of maybe not teachers, maybe mm-hmm. the people sort of further away from it.
Yeah, absolutely. Some people signed up and then they saw the gear list and they were like, why am I going to need all these things for my child?
You're in Canada.
I think there may have been some like it's called a forest school, but it was at the location where it was at. It was at kind of like, yeah, it's this community farm, but it's like a very, very nice community farm, like a kind of a fancy community farm. So a lot of people were like, oh, you know, they're going to be outside sometimes. And I don't think they realized exactly how much. So there were some hard conversations with parents about, you know, it's really cold and your child's going to be outside the whole day. If you can't bring them the proper gear, they'll need to go home. And then, you know, the toileting, sometimes some families were surprised that their child may do a tree pee in the woods. That was something that they've never experienced before. And yeah, I think there were a lot of surprises for families, but also a lot of families in our area are very outdoorsy. There's like a big ski culture here and there's a lot of hiking. So there are a lot of families who are already outside all the time with their kids. So I'd say more families knew what to expect than didn't. But those that didn't were like very, very shocked. But you know what? They all stuck the year out. And then at the end, they were so happy.
Converts.
they were converts. And they came to me at the end of the year and said things like, you know what? My child is the only member of our family who will hold a spider. Like all the other kids are like scared of bugs. And, you know, this child who came to forest school, she's picking them up and she feels comfortable in nature. She wants to go play in the woods while the others don't understand it. So I feel like they learned about how to prepare their child, what to expect. And then I think the year ended up being so great for them.
Yeah, there it is. That's the secret sauce. Yeah. So you spend thousands of hours, and you and your educators spend thousands of hours just simply observing children. So what have children taught you and or your teachers that adults tend to forget, that us adults?
Yeah, such a good question. One of my favorite things is, like, I feel like in the forest, we're always like looking down. But one day, a few months ago, one of the kids was like, "Mel, have you looked up today?" And I was like, "Oh my gosh, I never look up." And I looked up and I was like, "Oh my gosh, it's so pretty up there." But for whatever reason, we're always looking down. And now every single day in morning circle, I try to take a moment and be like, "Let's look up. Like, what does it look like up there today?" And yeah, he taught me that. And I never would have thought to do it. But there is something really special about just looking straight up and seeing the trees and the clouds coming by.
I love that. I'm going to start doing that.
Yeah. Yeah.
The ripple effect. That's so simple.
So simple. But I don't know why I was never looking up in the forest.
Well, I think we look down to see where we're going and whatnot. So kids are growing up very, very quickly. And so our kindergartens are now kind of first grade. If you were to sort of slow things down for those kiddos, what and how, if you were the queen, how would you, or a magic wand, how would you slow it down?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like there's just so much pressure for kids to be sitting and, you know, seeing the kids play outside all day, every day. Like, it just, I do not believe that kids are designed to be sitting in a classroom all day, especially when they're so young, like 4, 5, 6. Yeah. Like, they crave movement. And I just wish that all kids had the opportunity to move freely and sit when they want and like listen to their bodies. And, you know, maybe some days they want more sitting. Maybe they want to be reading books and, you know, have a more stationary day. But I wish kids could just have more time to play and have less structure in their day and just move freely.
Yeah.
Especially because, you know, the older you get, the more sitting there is. And then most kids will probably be sitting, you know, for work for a very long time. And yeah, it makes me sad to think that a lot of kids are missing out on all the playtime and the exploring and the imagination and the friendships and the connections and the learning and the hands-on fun that they have.
I love that. And I just listened to a podcast about the research behind all that, even as adults and children, that we are just not meant to sit. Mm-hmm. And how much time we sit. So it's front of mind. I've been sort of thinking a lot about that and how we put children in chairs so early on in life, and that they're supposed to be good. That's they're sort of trained. You're good if you're sitting still.
It makes me sad because they're good if they're sitting, but a lot of kids like literally can't stop themselves from moving.
Yeah.
Like they're trying so hard. And then I don't want any children to feel like they're like bad for not being able to sit through circle or not being able to sit through a full lesson, especially when they're so young. Like I feel like there's, you know, kindergarten's getting ready for grade one, grade one's getting ready for grade two. And it feels like there's like less and less play time and more sitting time, I would hope that it would be going in the opposite direction.
And I think your forest school, I mean, really just your philosophy is trust nature, trust children, and trust the whole, all of it. So do you feel that children are arriving differently to your program differently than maybe 5 or even 10 years ago? Maybe you weren't there 10 years ago, but
yeah.
Do you feel like they're arriving differently?
I do. I find that especially kids who haven't been with us before, like I said, they don't know how to just play because they're used to having their tablets at home. They're used to having like all the activities set up for them at school. So I feel like less and less are they experiencing just like open-ended play at home and in other educational settings. And I think it's so important for them to be able to just learn how to like play and, you know, use their imagination and build something with their friends and make a squirrel trap. So another thing I've noticed is, you know, the reliance on technology. So some kids come to forest school and they play, even though they don't have screens, they play Minecraft in the forest.
Yeah. Or they play the game.
But they're reenacting the game. So they're pretending to be Minecraft carriers and they find a stick that looks like their pickaxe and they're mining for, I don't know what they mine for in Minecraft, but they're mining for things.
They're playing it out.
They're playing it out. Yeah. And although they're in the forest the whole day, zero screens, there's some kids, they just talk about video games the whole day, which I feel like is not something I had experienced until maybe like late last year.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're trying to process it.
And I think it's a way for them to connect with others too. You know, like if they're new to the group and maybe, you know, they're like, do you play Minecraft? Because that's, you know, what they're used to at home. And if someone else says yes, then they're like, done. Like, we're going to be talking about Minecraft, you know?
Yeah. That's interesting. So with parents, what's the biggest transformation you see on their end?
I think one thing is they learn to accept risky play, which I'm sure you talk about and hear about all the time. But a lot of parents are so cautious and fearful of certain situations. Even, you know, their kid running in the forest, they're worried that they're going to trip and fall on a stick. But, you know, showing them that, you know, your child did trip and fall on a stick, but they're okay and they're brave and strong and they got up and then they kept playing. Or seeing their child climb a tree or, you know, learn how to make a fire from an early age. Some parents feel really uncomfortable with kids using tools, like the older kids might be using an axe with help from a teacher or a mallet or a drill. And maybe at home, that's not something they do. So they feel really worried about it. And then usually just a conversation with me helps to make them feel better because they realize that there are really, really strong policies. And we have very strict rules about tools. So once they hear what our policies are and what our teachers are taught, I think they feel a lot better. But I think they do still feel quite nervous with the risky play element.
Do you have a moment when every instinct in your body where you want to step in, but you didn't? And then what happened?
Yeah.
Or just even the question is, how do you know when to intervene?
Yeah. I mean, it really depends on the child. I think it's hard to answer because since it's the end of the year, I got to know all the kids' capabilities so much and they understand their boundaries and, you know, just like how far they're willing to go. I guess I think the one thing maybe I struggle with that I always want to say, like, stop, is, you know, when they're getting far from me, like I want to keep them all close. And our rule at forest school, at our forest school, is that they have to be able to see an educator at all times. Mm-hmm. So often they can see me, but they just feel so far away. And, you know, I'm a parent too. And risky play is still hard, even though I do it every day. But once they're away, I'm like, what? You know, if they do get hurt or need me, like they're so far, but I do trust them and I can still see them. They can see me, like it'll be okay. But yeah, I do have a hard time once they just start to wander a little bit farther than I would like.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So if I were to visit 5 years ago and then visited today, what do you think would surprise me?
Great question. So we used to just have options for 1 day a week children. So kids would come 1 day a week and then do something else the other 4 days. But I wanted to offer like more of a like full replacement to other educational models. So instead of kids coming 1 day a week, they can now come 5 days a week. Mm. Yeah, so that's one thing. I feel like things really do feel the way that they did 5 years ago. Like it feels very similar. Like the culture feels the same. We sing the same songs. We have pretty much all the same programs, a lot of the same kids even. I just don't think there would be a lot that would be like that shocking. Like what the former director created, I feel like worked so well and everyone loved it. The teachers were happy. I guess another thing now that I'm thinking of it is I had felt like I really wanted to like keep the staff that I liked. Like I noticed that there was a lot of turnover before and compensation wasn't exactly like on scale with like other private schools. So I did like increase tuition, not by like a crazy amount, but by enough where I could like pay teachers better to hopefully keep them around longer, which feels like a tricky thing because I know these programs are expensive and, you know, the ratios are small. So I want it to be accessible for everybody. But also I feel like the school really needs like a stable and reliable group of teachers. So I kind of chose to charge a little bit more to keep the teachers and to show them how much we appreciate them and the hard work that they do. But we do have subsidies too. So, you know, if there's a family who wants to join a program but needs some financial assistance, we've never turned anyone away, which is pretty fortunate. I'm really happy about that. But then even though we offer financial assistance, I always still feel kind of bad because even though, you know, we can subsidize a spot, they still have to have a car to get to the forest. And a lot of the families who might need financial support also probably don't have a car that they can use all the time. Maybe their family shares a car or maybe they use transit in town. So yeah, in the future, I'd love to find a way to make our programs even more accessible to all families.
That's so great. So has your definition of success changed since you first opened? Your roles have changed. I mean, over the years, I mean, it's been sort of this complete journey. It's exciting.
Yeah. And I think, too, a lot of the other teachers, like their roles have changed, too, where when a teacher wants to be working more, maybe we make up a role for them where they're more involved in other ways. There's just like there's so much work to be done all the time, whether, you know, the kids want to be in the Santa Claus parade this year or if they want to, I don't know, have some sort of like party at wintertime. Yeah, I just feel like there's so much work to be done. So everyone's role kind of has been changing.
I think that goes back to the trust. I think that goes back to the original trusting the kids, trusting nature, trusting the way that we're redesigning education. And to me, it might feel like a free fall because it is different. But I think the more that we all talk about it and do it, it's not a free fall. But in the way you're describing your program, I love how you describe it as, yeah, we have three activities maybe a day, but we might end up catching squirrels, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And how you were so excited about that bubble activity. There's a trust that I feel like is truly embedded in your philosophy and your educator's philosophy and in just everything that you do. And it feels also that you're empowering your educators and that brings success. I feel like, you know, if they want to do more or less or not less, they want to just be more creative in any shape or form, the opportunities are there.
Yeah. Well, also less too, like, you know, some teachers may recognize that, you know what, I signed on to work 4 days a week, but I think I would be a way better teacher if I was working 3 days a week. And
interesting.
I've had that conversation with many teachers and, you know, we support it. And a lot of our teachers too will take like a lot of time off, which I think is really healthy. Mm-hmm. So a few of our teachers have taken 1 to 3 months off to travel. But when they do come back, they're so excited to be back. The kids are so excited mm-hmm. to see them. They just seem like fully recharged and happy. And I think it's so important to take care of the educators so that they can show up for the kids every day. Because, you know, if they're burnt out or tired, or if they feel like resentful that they didn't get to, that they missed out on a trip, or that there was something else they wanted to do outside of this, like I wouldn't like that. But going back to your question about success, like to me, a successful day, like, I don't know. I feel like I very much take it one day at a time. And I think the day just feels successful when, you know, when the kids are going home at the end of the day, having learned something, having interacted with their peers, and, you know, we're happy and maybe overcame some challenges. And I think, you know, there will be hard days when lots of kids have challenges or are having big feelings, but I think that doesn't mean it's not a good day. I think it just means it's a hard day and that they're growing and learning something. So I think that has changed for me a bit where, you know, if there was like a really chaotic day where lots of kids seemed unhappy, I would view that as like a failure on my part. Like, why did the kids seem unhappy today? Why were they crying? Why were they so upset by these things that they wouldn't normally be upset by? But I think, yeah, having gone through this many, many times now, I've just learned that things are kind of like cyclical almost, and that, you know, they go through cycles where things feel harder, just like us. And then they go through times where things feel easier. And yeah, I feel like a successful day is just a day where the kids are safe and happy and they've learned something and overcome some challenges in the forest.
Yeah. It's that, you know, that feeling when you've been outside. Well, you probably feel it every day when you've been outside all day long and you have that feeling at the end of the day, just like pure, wonderful exhaustion.
Yes.
It's like, yes. And it's like earned, you know.
It's
earned. And having like a chocolate or something.
Yes. And I've tried so hard to explain this to people who are not in the field. And you explained it perfectly. But like a tea, like a warm tea doesn't hit the same when you've been inside all day. Warm tea, like at the end of a long forest school day, just it feels so good. Like a tea has never tasted so good as it does at the end of the forest school day.
Everything tastes better. And then especially during the winter, like if you've been in, and I tell this to my parents in the winter, because it's usually the kids are fine and the parent, because I have a parent-child program and the parents are just like, ah, and I'm like, no, believe me, when you go home, you will have earned a warm cup of tea and everything will taste better. So
everything tastes better. Everything feels better. That like warm or scalding hot shower after cold outside in the winter. Oh my gosh. It feels so good. And it does. I haven't really like thought too much about it, but there is something like that. I don't know, like feeling that you've earned it. Like it's just such a good feeling. I don't know what it is.
My father used to say that you got to earn it.
Yeah.
Earn your wine.
Or like whatever thing.
Or chocolate or hot chocolate.
Literally anything, like anything that you enjoy. I feel like after a day of forest school, like you enjoy it like 10 times more, you know?
Yeah.
Even if you're like, I'm going to watch a show now. Like I just worked all day outside. I'm going to sit down, have a glass of wine and watch a show under my blanket with the fire on. Like it just feels so much better than, you know, those days when you're inside the whole day. It's just so much better.
So great.
Yeah.
So I have a final thing. So I want you to imagine it's 20 years from now. One of your former students is now an adult walking through a forest with their own child. What do you hope they're passing on? Not because they remember a lesson you taught, but because of how they experienced childhood at Oro Madante Forest School.
Wow, that's like a really emotional question. I'm like tearing up, and you really like painted a picture there, and I'm getting so emotional thinking about, you know, the kids that I work with being grown up and walking through the forest with their own kids. I guess the one thing that I would hope to see passed down to that next generation would be like, you know, a family who's not like, let's go, we're walking, like, come on, we got to go, we're on our walk. But maybe a family who's just like meandering through the forest, you know, especially with the younger kids, like they don't necessarily want to go for a hike to get to one spot to the next. They want to go for a hike to like explore and like roll over some logs and see what they can find. And they might notice a bird. And I would just hope that the adult would like follow the child's lead and, you know, notice the things with them versus like trying to rush them through the hike and roll over the logs with them and admire the birds and just like really slow down. I hope that would happen.
Yeah. Oh, I could talk to you all day long.
Oh, same. I get so excited talking about this.
So exciting. And the work that you're doing is absolutely beautiful and has this incredible, I can just feel it, the ripple effect of all the families that you're touching. And I can't wait to just follow you and learn more what's happening in Canada. So I will have all your information in the show notes. Any final things you'd like to share with our community?
Oh, wow. That's a big one. Yeah. I mean, I guess just like it's days outside with kids, they're hard and it feels hard because it is hard. but it's so rewarding and so worth it. And especially in like on a cold day or a wet day, like you might look outside and be like, I just don't want to go out there. But I promise you, once you get your gear on and once you're out there with them, it's just like it's so fun and it's so magical to spend time outside with kids. They notice the most amazing things. And I feel like it's so healthy for adults to be outside with their kids. And yeah, even if you don't have kids, just spend more time in nature, noticing and appreciating what's around us. Like the world is so beautiful. And I feel like, you know, we spend a lot of time kind of like heads down working inside, but I hope everyone spends some time outside.
Yay!
Yay!
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Yeah, it was lovely talking to you. And thank you so much for all the work you do. It's amazing. And I'm also excited to continue to follow your journey.
Thanks. Talk soon.
Yeah, talk soon. Thank you.
Before you go, I want to share an invitation. If you are an educator who knows outdoor learning matters, but you want more structure, confidence, and support, the Outdoor Teaching Bootcamp might be exactly what you need right now. This is a 5-week online foundations course and is the first step in our Outdoor Classrooms Teacher Certification Program. Each week, we focus on one of the 5 phases of teaching outdoors, helping you build a strong, sustainable rhythm for your outdoor classroom. You'll get pre-recorded lessons inside a private portal that you can move through at your own pace, along with 5 weekly live Zoom sessions where we come together to reflect, ask questions, and connect with other educators from all over the country doing this work. If you're curious whether the bootcamp is the right fit for you, I'd love to talk to you. You can schedule a one-on-one discovery call with me, Victoria, and we'll think through it together. Head on over to our website to learn more, or we'll have the link in the show notes as well, and see when the next Outdoor Teaching Bootcamp cohort is opening. Thanks for listening and for the work that you're doing to bring learning back into the relationship with nature. So P.S., if you are a Circle member and you are interested in taking the Outdoor Teaching Bootcamp, you get $100 off the price. So there are huge discounts for joining our Circle membership community. So again, if you have any questions about this, schedule that one-on-one call with me, and I'd be happy to answer any questions. Talk to you soon. Bye.